By way of background, before I get onto the role of the police, whenever the tribes fought back, which they didn't do with much success and they didn't do it very often, but whenever they did, if they attacked a white man or killed a white man, they were severely punished for that. And I should say that only 20 whites were killed to 1900 in the whole of the Gulf Country, an area the size of Victoria. Now, if that happened, they were punished. Now I'll read from the speech. This work of punishing the blacks was usually done by the police, often supplemented by a large posse of stockmen. The primary role of the police was not to maintain law and order, but to make the territory safe for whites and their cattle, regardless of the cost in Aboriginal lives and misery. The police were armed with Martini Henry carbines and 45 calibre revolvers. While only revolvers were used against whites, the Martini Henry carbines were used primarily and almost exclusively for shooting Aboriginal people. It was as if an unofficial war had been declared on the true owners of the land. And may I say, the Martini Henrys were an advance on the old Sniders, and the Sniders were designed for big game hunting in Africa. They were designed to kill elephants. In the euphemistic language of the northern frontier from Queensland to the Kimberley, dispersing the blacks simply meant shooting them. But once this expression became widely understood, it was replaced by two others with exactly the same meaning: punishing the blacks or teaching them a lesson. A severe lesson meant wholesale slaughter, while a lesson they will never forget meant exactly that. The last example of this was in 1928, when about 100 people were shot near Coniston Station. Punishment also involved wanton destruction. After slaughtering the occupants of a camp, the police would burn the bodies, the houses, weapons and canoes, and shoot the dogs. Station managers and stockmen did likewise. The Americans might have called this shock and awe. The police were an avenging force, acting as judge, jury and executioner. Historian Tony Austin has described their methods as extreme paramilitary measures. The man in charge of policing in the territory for the whole of the frontier period from 1870 until his retirement in 1904 was Inspector Paul Fulsch, a former soldier in the German army. Fulsch was clever, cunning and devious. With Aboriginal people, he was utterly ruthless. In 1875, he sent a large party of police and civilians to the Roper River with these cryptic but sinister instructions: "I cannot give you orders to shoot all natives you come across, but circumstances may occur for which I cannot provide definite instructions," unquote. In a letter to a friend, he was more candid, saying the men had been sent to the Roper, quote, "to have a picnic with the natives," and I don't think he sent them with a tablecloth and a basket of sandwiches. He said he would like to have gone himself, but he didn't care for large parties because, he said, quote, "there are too many tale-tellers." Evidence suggests the death toll was over 100. 3 years later, in another letter to the same friend, Fulsch referred to recent police massacres near Pine Creek as, quote, "our nigger hunt." In another letter, he observed, quote, "by the majority of the population here," that is in Darwin, "the Aborigines are looked upon as beasts, destitute of reason, and are treated as such." In 1880 and 1881, after two white men were murdered on the coast track near the Limonbite River, Fulsch complained that, quote, "the dread of police is unknown down there." This was a most telling remark. He asked the government in his usual cryptic language for what amounted to immunity from prosecution for his men, so they might kill sufficient of the local tribes to teach them a lesson. He said he wanted to, quote, "inflict severe chastisement if the government will legalise it." In 1886, when a stockman was killed on MacArthur River Station while attempting to shoot Aboriginals, a party of 22, led by Constable William Curtis, shot 64 people in one camp alone, according to a stockman who took part. This was institutionalised slaughter, funded and approved by the South Australian government on a scale that beggars belief.
That's one extract from the speech, and it brings us to the point of responsibility and culpability. Tony Roberts, and as I say, that's an issue that is very much, in a way, linked to what we were talking about with East Timor earlier this morning. So, government culpability, Tony Roberts?
Who should be held accountable for the rapid dispossession, and that occurred within 4 years, 3,000 people dispossessed an area the size of Victoria in just 4 years, totally dispossessed. Who should be held accountable for the rapid dispossession, the cruelty and the slaughter in the Gulf Country and throughout the territory? Before the leases were issued during the pastoral boom of 1881, the government knew from a wide variety of reports that the Gulf Country was heavily populated. They knew exactly what the consequences of wholesale pastoral settlement would be from experience in South Australia over the past 45 years: starvation, sickness, degradation and massacres. At the very time as it was issuing leases in the Gulf Country, the government was issuing rations in South Australia, and had been for decades, thanks to pressure from missionaries and other humanitarians. There were also protectors of Aboriginals in South Australia. But in the Gulf Country, there were no ration depots, no protectors, and for the first 5 to 7 years, no police officers to curb the excesses of station managers. And when the police did arrive, they took charge of the slaughter, taking no prisoners. Successive South Australian governments were responsible for all of this, all of it. They issued the leases. They failed to help the dispossessed. They used the police as terrorists to enforce white settlement. They armed them with military rifles that could kill elephants. They gave them unlimited ammunition and authority to use it. Most damning of all, they knew Inspector Fulsh was a ruthless killer, yet they left him in charge for the whole of the frontier period, 34 years, from 1870 until his retirement in 1904, then rewarded him with the Imperial Service Medal. Kaiser Wilhelm gave him a gold medal. Can we be sure that governments knew what was happening in the territory? Yes, absolutely. There was a steady stream of major police massacres from at least 1874 to the late 1890s. There were some police reports. There were quarterly reports from the government resident in Darwin, letters from station owners, first-hand reports from visiting Territorians, and enthusiastic reports in the Northern Territory Times. And they knew that they were shipping massive quantities of Martini Henry bullets to the territory. They knew all right. In all of the circumstances, it is impossible to avoid the conclusion that the Aboriginal people of the Northern Territory were expendable and had been earmarked for extermination if required. Under the international laws of war, it is likely that the South Australian government would have been guilty of war crimes had it formally declared war on its own Aboriginal peoples in the territory and then conducted that war in the manner I have described.